Chapter 7. Derek nods and dials Mac as Stiles turns out onto the main road. Got an address? Half a sec, Mac says, and then starts to rattle an address off. Derek is entering it into the GPS on his phone as she says it, and the pleasant female voice tells them it will take 35 minutes to reach their destination. Thank God we don't have to drive all the way to Fresno, Stiles mutters, pressing harder on the accelerator. Gwen lives about 20 minutes north of the city, which puts her about 20 minutes closer to Beacon Hills. Stiles makes the drive that the GPS says should take 35 minutes in 26. He skids up outside a small two-story house and bolts up to the door without even thinking about what sort of trap it might be, and bangs on the door. Inside the house, there's the sound of a few barking dogs, but other than that, nothing. Stiles stands there, tense and anxious, and then raps again. He's about to ask Derek to break the door down when it swings open. Gwen is standing there in a tank top and yoga pants, with a questioning expression on her face. Stiles, what on earth? Oh my God! Stiles says, and throws his arms around her. She hugs back in startled silence. You didn't answer your phone! I was in the shower, Gwen says. Come inside, for goodness sake. Stiles follows her inside and sinks into the first chair he sees, watching as Derek gestures to the others, deploying them outside the house to patrol and make a perimeter. He doesn't realize he's hyperventilating until Gwen kneels down in front of him and starts talking him through some of his deep breathing exercises. When he finally manages to get his shit together, he says, Okay, right, sorry, we've gotta go. There's like an 80% chance that Sally's coming here to kill you. Therapist-patient boundaries are off the table. Pack a bag. Gwen rises smoothly and says, There's a bag of dog food on the shelf in the pantry. Can you grab it for me? Sure. Stiles jogs into the kitchen and finds the dog food. He takes it out to the car. Gwen comes back down the stairs less than 2 minutes later, carrying a backpack and a laptop bag. She hands them to Derek, then picks up a bundle of leashes. Where's the other Dr. Mulrooney? Stiles asks. Doing fieldwork in Costa Rica, Gwen says. It's just me and the dogs right now. How many dogs do you have? Stiles asks, seeing the bundle. 4. Gwen lets out a sharp whistle. 3 pugs come trotting into the front hallway, tongues lolling happily. A wheezing English bulldog follows, ambling along at a much slower pace. Moments later, Gwen has them all leashed up and they're headed out to the car. Derek opens the passenger door for Gwen, and she gets in, holding the bulldog in her lap and letting the pugs sit at her feet. 4 dogs, Stiles says, trying to kickstart his brain as he starts driving. Gwen looks amused. I like dogs. I guess it just never occurred to me to think about, Stiles says. I mean, I knew you were married, but I had no idea if you had any kids or pets or what sort of place you lived or... Stiles, that's my job, Gwen says. If you know a lot about my personal life, I'm doing something wrong. But since some of the boundaries seem to be going out the window, I don't have any children. I've never particularly wanted children, and Brent doesn't either. But he does travel a lot, and sometimes I get lonely when he's away, so I have dogs. This is Gladstone, she says, ruffling the ears of the bulldog. And those 3 are Wilkin, Blilkin, and Nod. That's adorable, Stiles says. Adorable names for adorable dogs, Gwen says. Now, why is Sally coming to kill me? Well, she thinks I killed her boyfriend, Stiles says, which I actually didn't, but she's pretty pissed off at me and decided she was going to go after the person I can't live without, or specifically, the person who helps me live rather than survive. Gwen gives a little grimace. Well, I suppose I'm flattered. Do we have any sort of plan? Well, I didn't plan further than get to Gwen before Sally murders her, so no, at the moment I don't, but I'll come up with one. Presumably. I mean, I usually do. How did she even know who Gwen is? Derek asks, leaning over the seat so he could briefly nuzzle at Styles' ear. Honestly, we don't even know that she knows, Styles says, calming down a little. It's actually pretty common knowledge that I see a therapist. And she heard about it from Jonas, who heard about it from Annika. She and I talked about it a lot, because she had a lot of the same issues I did about needing therapy, feeling like it made you weak, not wanting her dad or her brother to know, etc. So she mentioned it to Jonas at some point. Presumably he was a dick about her seeing a therapist. From there, it would be pretty simple to figure out. There aren't a lot of psychologists who specialize in supernatural trauma. And don't forget, we have no idea how long or how closely Sally has been watching us. The fact that I was a regular commuter to Fresno for a while would make it pretty easy to narrow down. I don't suppose it's worth asking how you got my home address? Gwen says, and Styles just gives her a rueful little shrug. Thought not. Anyway, Sally might or might not know exactly who my therapist is, Gwen says, and odds are good that there's a trap in here somehow. She could have just blown up Gwen's house with her in it before we even got there. If she knew who she was, maybe she was counting on us to lead her to Gwen? Maybe she just wanted to send me into a panic. This is Sally, so... So she's undoubtedly got something nasty planned, Derek says, and leans back in his seat with a sigh. Right, which is why we're going to get back to the den, and then put up a circle of mountain ash so at the very least she can't nuke us from orbit, Styles says. He tries to clear his head as he drives. The others are following behind, and Derek is texting, updating the people still in Wyoming of the situation. Styles hates splitting up the pack, hates that feeling of being spread thin. A petty part of him wishes that he had killed Jonas, since apparently Sally's going to get revenge for something he didn't even do. When they reach the den, Styles sends Boyd, Isaac, and Danny to do a quick patrol and make sure that nobody has somehow gotten in while they were gone. Jackson goes to set up the circle of mountain ash and some other magical defenses. Styles arms the fence and double-checks all the traps. He wishes like hell that Allison was here. She's the best at this sort of thing. But there's nothing he can do about it. Okay, so, he says, finally taking a breath and turning to face Gwen, who's waiting for him patiently in the living room. It's late. I guess you can have the guest room. Oh God, can she have the guest room? Has the guest room been cleaned in, like, the last decade? He looks appealingly at the others. It's probably a disaster. I'm sorry. Styles, it's fine, Gwen says soothingly. You don't need to apologize for the accommodations. You weren't expecting guests, and I'm hardly about to complain. But since I'm here, I'd love a cup of tea and to experience your baking firsthand. Right. Right. Styles lets out a breath. The dogs can, wander, I guess. I mean, they're housebroken, right? He adds. And Gwen arches an eyebrow at him. Of course they are. Yeah, they can go wherever. Let's make some cookies. He's smart enough to know that Gwen's handling him, that she's redirecting him to positive, productive activity. But hell, she's his therapist. That's her job. So he heads into the kitchen. Derek is on his heels, and all the wolves are hovering. Gwen settles into one of the kitchen chairs. Gladstone, the bulldog, sits down right at her feet, while the pugs run around and explore. Any preferences? He asks Gwen, rooting around in the cupboard. She's had his ginger snaps. Virtually everyone he's ever met has had his ginger snaps. And he's given her a cookie plate for the last two Christmases running, so she knows approximately what he's good at. Would you laugh if I said oatmeal raisin? Gwen asks, smiling at him. No, somehow I can see that, Styles says. And laughs, his panic easing back a bit. He starts to assemble the ingredients. Derek is already heating the kettle for tea. And actually there are pack members who like them, but hardly ever ask for them because they know that most people don't, so they feel bad. So this will make you pretty popular with Boyd and Mac. Gwen nods. Don't forget that I'm allergic to dairy. Yep, got it, Styles says. Butter-flavored Crisco. The substitute of the gods for vegans, lactose intolerance, and allergic people everywhere. Gwen chuckles quietly. All right. Do you want to talk about what's happened since the last time we spoke? Sure. Styles huffs out a sigh. He's quiet for a few minutes while he gets all the ingredients together and starts measuring. Once he's stopped moving, Derek sits down on the counter next to him, like he always does. Styles starts telling Gwen about his decision to go after Jonas instead of continuing to pursue the demon and the warlock, pausing occasionally so he can run the mixer. All I seemed to be doing in that arena was making things worse, so I figured that if I did something unexpected, I could make Sally react to me instead of vice versa. Well, Gwen says, sipping the tea that Derek made her, she certainly did that. Yeah, but this wasn't what I had in mind, Styles says. He looks over as one of the pugs trots in and starts sniffing his feet. You've got a thing for pugs, huh? It's actually a somewhat funny story, Gwen says. See, I've had Gladstone for years, and I'd been thinking about getting a second dog, but never quite gotten around to it. After I met you, we talked so much about therapy dogs. I did some work for a volunteer organization that helped pick out shelter dogs that had the right personalities to be therapy dogs. And pugs are actually often overlooked, but are a very good breed for emotional service dogs. Obviously, you can't use them for guide dogs or mobility dogs, but for PTSD or depression, they work wonders. I do see how that would work, Styles says, looking down at the little black pug that's pawing at his ankle. In any case, these three were dumped at a shelter together, Gwen says, and had a lot of issues when people tried to split them up. Nobody who was looking for a service dog was really in a place to handle three service dogs, so I ended up bringing them home myself. Winken and Blinken are boys. Nod is a girl. Styles slides the first tray of cookies into the oven. It's weird to think of you having a life outside that office in Fresno. He rubs his hands over his face and says, I'm really sorry about this. It never occurred to me that I would put you in danger. Believe it or not, Gwen says, this isn't my first time being in danger. People with supernatural trauma bring an interesting flavor to work in my field. Although, once I was actually accosted by the ex-boyfriend of a completely mundane client of mine who blamed me for their breakup. What happened? Styles asks. I maced him and ran like hell, Gwen says, and Styles laughs. But you see my point, Styles. Nobody is ever 100% safe, in this universe or any other. Yeah, I guess you're right, Styles says. How'd you get into this field anyway? Gwen takes a sip of her tea and says, It's probably less exciting than you would hope. I didn't know anything about the supernatural until shortly after I met Brent. He and I started dating, and he invited me along on one of his camping trips. I knew he was a cryptozoologist, but I also knew he was an intelligent person, so I figured his work was legitimate. But up until he caught and tagged the first manticore, I hadn't realized exactly how legitimate. That must have been a nasty shock, Styles says, laughing. Just a bit of one, Gwen says, reaching down to ruffle Gladstone's ears. I was already working on my doctorate at that point, and was doing my thesis on PTSD. I asked Brent if people ever got attacked by supernatural creatures, and he said yes. And I thought, how horrible that must be for them, to be unable to talk about their experiences, or not believed, or not even believe themselves. I started looking into it, and, well, the rest is history. Good thing, too, considering how fucked up I'd be without you, Styles says. The cookies come out of the oven a few minutes later, and Styles is back to being calm, trying to think things through. He still feels like there's a trap in here somewhere, but he can't quite see it. Does it have to do with Gwen's work with Oblivion? How much does Sally even know about Gwen? What is it that he's not seeing? Once the cookies have been eaten, everyone is starting to yawn. Boyd and Isaac have cleaned up the guest room. Gwen reiterates that she'll be just fine there, and everyone drifts away to bed. I think I'm going to stay up a while. Maybe make some bread, Styles says. He doesn't often make things that take time to rise, but he does enjoy kneading dough. So when he's got time to kill because he can't sleep, He figures he might as well give it a whirl. "Do you want me to stay up?" Derek asks. "Nah, you're tired. I'll be okay." Styles says, "Okay, come get me if you need me. You promise?" "Yeah, I promise." Styles pulls the jar of yeast out of the refrigerator and kisses Derek on the cheek. Derek ruffles his hair and then heads up the stairs with the others. Styles puts on some music on his phone and starts mixing. He decides to make brioche, a recipe he had perfected a while ago. It cold rises so he can make the dough and then leave it in the refrigerator until morning. He mixes the flour and yeast, sugar and salt, then pours in the hot water and starts adding eggs one at a time. Between the sound of the mixer and the music playing, he doesn't hear anyone come into the room. He's not exactly on guard. This is his den, his safe space. There's nothing to be afraid of here. So when there's suddenly the point of a knife pressed into his throat, it takes him completely by surprise. He freezes, in as much confusion as fear. "What the? Don't move," a voice says. A woman's voice. A very familiar woman's voice. Styles risks a glance over his shoulder and sees Gwen standing behind him. She's half a foot shorter, but has plenty enough height to reach up and press the knife into his jugular. And her eyes are entirely black, just like Naomi White's were. "Oh my God," Styles says, his voice coming out weak and wobbly. "And don't scream." "Not," Gwen says. "Don't call your pack. They're all sound asleep. No need to trouble them, am I right?" "Oh my God," Styles says again, trying to breathe, trying to think. If the warlock has taken control of Gwen, it was probably hours before Sally even called him. This was a trap. Gwen as a Trojan horse. But he can't bring himself to care about that, or about the knife pressed into his throat. All he can think about is the look of grief on Lorelai's face, about Jackson saying that it wasn't the sort of thing people came back from. "Oh my God, Gwen!" "Shut up," Cameron says. "You're going to come with me." "No, don't reach for your phone. Do you think I'm stupid? Leave it." Styles lifts his hands in surrender. He can already hear noise upstairs. Footsteps. He doesn't need to shout to get the pack's attention when he's in trouble. They can already feel his panic reverberating down the bond they share. Cameron hears it too, and twists around to put Styles between him and the others, just as Derek barrels in, naked and half-shifted. He comes to an abrupt halt when he sees Gwen standing behind Styles with a knife at his throat. "What the fuck?" Derek breathes out. "Cameron has her," Styles says. He can feel tears stinging at his eyes. This is all my fault. I didn't think. Shut up!" Cameron digs the knife in, and Styles feels the pinch of it, feels blood trickle down his neck. Several of the wolves let out low growls. "We are going to walk out of here nice and slow," he says. "Turn off that electric fence you've got running." Everyone in the room looks at Styles for direction. He tries to clear his head, tries to think about something other than Gwen's black eyes. "Okay," he says. Derek walks over to where he left the remote on the table by the front door and presses the buttons on it. "Now let Styles go." "Styles is coming with me," Cameron says. "Why do you think I came here?" "Styles can't help you find your body," Derek says. "Oh, he can," Cameron says. "He just doesn't know it yet." He takes another glance over his shoulder, taking quick, careful steps backwards, pulling Styles along with him. "Styles," Derek says quietly. Styles lifts his gaze to Derek and whispers, "I have to go. I have to stay with Gwen until I can..." His voice breaks. He can't finish the sentence, can't even finish the thought, but he can see the understanding in Derek's gaze, and his Lupa nods. By the time they get to the door of the house, Styles is recovering enough to wonder exactly where the fuck Cameron plans on taking him. Is he going to make Styles drive? Does he have a car waiting? Is Sally hovering in the wings to pick them up? As soon as Cameron eases up on the knife, Styles is pretty sure that someone is going to make a move. They won't do anything lethal, not with Gwen's life in the balance. But Gwen would probably forgive some bruises if it kept Cameron from using her body to kill Styles. But none of that happens. As soon as they reach the circle of Mountain Ash, Cameron scuffs the line with his toe. Mountain Ash is funny, Styles has always thought, in that any sorcerer can make or break a circle. A circle of Mountain Ash is only an obstacle to a sorcerer if they can't get to it. All you need is the intent. And as soon as the circle is broken, Cameron pulls them backwards, and the world ripples around them. Going through a way is an interesting experience. Styles has only done it a few times, before this week, and he's starting to get used to the sensation. It always makes him a little dizzy, and he closes his eyes involuntarily. He knows the feeling as soon as it happens, and when he opens his eyes, he isn't even surprised to see that he's in a completely different place. It's not a very exciting one. He's lying on a dirt floor and surrounded by stone walls. The only light is from a campfire. Darkness crowds around him in every direction. He doesn't see the moon or any stars. The smell is vaguely metallic underneath the dirt, and he can hear a distant drip, drip of water. "Well, well," Sally's voice says, "you actually got him." Cameron releases Styles and gives him a little shove. "Told you I would." "I shouldn't be surprised, given the bait," Sally says, and something in her amused tone makes Styles' temper snap. He doesn't even stop to think as he just leaps forward and takes her in a full tackle. Magic or no magic, martial arts or no martial arts, in that moment he wants blood, and he doesn't care what happens to him. He wants to grab Sally by her hair and smash her head against the ground until her skull crushes. He wants to tear her throat out with his teeth. The sudden move, so uncomplicated and unlike him, takes her off guard. For a few brief seconds, Styles has the upper hand. He has just enough time to get his hands around her throat before he finds himself flying backwards through the air. He slams up against the stone wall and lets out a grunt, trying to push off and regain his momentum. But suddenly he finds himself frozen in midair, unable to move at all. "I wouldn't," Sally says mildly, and gestures. Styles looks where she's pointing reluctantly, to see Cameron, still in Gwen's body, now holding the knife against Gwen's throat. "He needs a body." "Oh, we still have Naomi," Sally says, and glances over at a limp form huddled in a corner. "We only needed Gwen to get to you. She might even survive, since she's only been possessed for a few hours. But that, of course, depends entirely on your cooperation." After a moment, Styles gives a nod. He drops to the floor, released from Sally's spell. "I can't find Cameron's body for you." Sally laughs. "Of course not. I have something else in mind. All we have to do is find the Oblivion facility." "No shit, Sherlock," Styles says. "That's what we've been trying to do the entire time. Why the fuck do you think I know where it is?" "You don't," Sally says, and points to Gwen. "She does." "Shit," Styles says, and he realizes that Sally is right. Of course Sally is right. "We tried to just get her to tell us," Sally says, "but she was very recalcitrant. We needed some leverage, and now we have you." She gives him a merry smile and says, "Funny old world, isn't it? Use her to get to you, so we can use you against her. That's the danger of caring about people." "Why don't you shut the fuck up?" Styles asks. And okay, it's not his best comeback ever, but he's having a rough night. The smile disappears off Sally's face. "You've made me angry, Styles. It's not easy to make me angry, but you've done it. You took Jonas away from me, and I don't appreciate that. So I'm going to take someone away from you." Styles struggles back to his feet and says, "Don't you even try to compare this, because I know you better than that. Don't you even think that you can understand what Gwen has done for me? And let's be real for a minute, Sally Stone. You're not angry because your boyfriend is dead. You're angry because I outsmarted you. Because you thought you had me and I outmaneuvered you. That's why you're pissed off. I took away one of your precious game pieces and you hate feeling like you're not the best player at the table. So you can be pissed at me all you want for killing Jonas, but don't you fucking pretend he meant 1/10 to you what Gwen does to me. Sally's eyes narrow. You're right, she says with a nod. You're absolutely right, Styles. So you know what? I think I'm going to make sure that you and Gwen suffer 10 times as much as I am right now. Styles opens his mouth, then thinks that maybe he should stop talking before he makes things even worse. Now, take off your protection charm, Sally says. Why in the holy hell would I do that? Styles asks. Sally's gaze flicks to Gwen. Ha! No, you just told me that you need her alive. And I know you plan to make us suffer, so having your little warlock buddy wave his pig sticker around isn't going to work anymore. You want to hurt me? Do it with your bare hands, because my protection spell isn't going anywhere. Fair enough, Sally says brightly, and spins around suddenly, aiming a roundhouse kick at his face. He only barely gets his arms up in time to block, and grabs her by the ankle, trying to pull her off her feet. She does an impressive flip, pivots on one hand, and lands back on her feet. Styles is so intent on her that he never notices Cameron and the stun gun until he's on the floor, writhing in pain. Don't worry, Styles, Sally says, and pats his cheek. I'm going to take good care of you.